Hello once again and welcome to Food Friday on Vox Pop. I'm Katie Britton. This afternoon, we're going to have your mouths watering and your mixers going as we set off on the sweet exploration of cakes. The beauty of the word cake is that everyone pictures a different kind when they hear it. For me, it's a white vanilla layer cake with whipped buttercream frosting and shaved coconut on top. But for our guests, they picture something different completely different. So I'd like to introduce our first guest, Sue Haltalski. Sue has a culinary career that spans over 40 years. She's an American Culinary Federation certified executive chef and a certified culinary educator. She's currently teaching classical pastry, cake baking, cake decorating, and artisan bread production at Schenectady County Community College. Now that's alliteration. And I'd also like to introduce Linda Kindlin. Linda has been in the food industry for 25 years and is a self-taught baker. For the past 4 years, she's been the owner of Bake For You, located on Delaware Avenue in Albany. We'd love to hear from you. It's a great time to ask your questions about cake baking. Give us your tips and share your favorite recipes. The number to call is 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. Linda and Sue, welcome to Vox Pop.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So cake, you both have such impressive resumes. I'd like to know a little bit on how you got, how you became bakers and how you got to where you are today. Linda, why don't we start with you?
Well, I always loved to bake, and coming from an Italian family, it was always food and cooking and baking. So I found a lot of solace in the kitchen. And then I just always, with my kids growing up, I loved baking for them, and it just kind of snowballed into Bake For You, which is fun.
So you said the first place, though, where you started baking out of wasn't your conventional storefront or kitchen.
Oh, no. I baked in a church basement kitchen. It was a beautiful commercial kitchen that, typical of the old churches that had these big kitchens, no one used them any longer, and I was lucky enough to get one, and I baked out of there for 4 years.
For 4 years, really?
4 years. We just moved to our new location in November.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That must have been a really exciting transition for you to go from the church basement kitchen to your storefront.
Oh, God, I know. I was in my own little fishbowl in the basement. And then now to have the storefront, it's definitely, it's exciting and it's a lot of fun because now I can see people when they come in and they eat something and they're like, oh, my God, I love that. It's just that instant, you know, watching how excited they are to try our stuff. So,
the instinct. I want to get back to that. But first, Sue, how did you get started?
Well, in baking, it was sort of by default. I started, the first 20 years of my career were culinary based. I was a chef. And when I sort of switched gears and went into teaching, one of the very first courses they asked me to teach was baking. And they said, can you bake? And I said, sure. And I couldn't. So I read a lot of books and I watched my colleagues. And that's how I got started in baking. And quite honestly, it was like a love affair, an instant love affair. I loved yeast production and bread and cakes. And yeah, it was just awesome. So that was how it got started for me.
So Linda, you mentioned the instinct, and I think a lot of people are more scared to bake than they are to cook because it's so exact. And so when you're thinking of new cakes or new recipes that you want to work on, how is it for you just to have that knowledge, that base knowledge to say, okay, well, I know I'm going to need at least this many cups of flour, this many eggs, and this much baking soda or baking powder. So you know when you're in that testing phase, it won't automatically come out just completely flat or...
Sometimes it does.
So they shouldn't be afraid of such things.
Absolutely not. I can't tell you the things that I have this great idea in my head and I'm like, oh, I'm going to mix this and this. And then I'm like, oh, you know, it comes out and you're like, oh, well, we're not going to sell this one today. You know, it does happen. You know, it's not... I always tell people, don't be afraid. Just try it. And what's the worst thing that can happen? It's not going to be good.
Right.
You know? And then you just try again.
1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. So for you, Sue, I mean, you're teaching hundreds and hundreds of students. how to bake these cakes and then decorate them.
Right. So for me and for my students, it's a little bit different. We approach it very scientifically. And all of the baking production, no matter what we're baking, is done using the metric system. We don't even measure using the U.S. measurement system. We don't weigh ingredients using pounds and ounces. We use the metrics because it's just so much more accurate. And so everything is very precise. And we teach bread production using percentages. So once you have a percentage for a formula, then you can change it, upscale it, or downsize it if you wish. So we take a more scientific approach to baking, particularly cakes and sweets.
So there's always the question, scoop your flour and level it, or do you spoon it in because then it makes it a little bit more airy and then level it? I mean, a lot of people do different things, but it just adds or takes away that much flour.
I'm a really unconventional baker. And sometimes people, if they come in and they're watching me, it makes them nervous because I really, now it's just I do it so much that I just scoop and I don't follow that. I'd probably not be good in her class. I'd be in trouble. But I'm just definitely unconventional. And for some reason, it always comes out. And I'm not saying that's the way to do it. Probably your system works better.
But you probably weigh since you're using the metric.
Right. We weigh everything. We don't use volume measuring. Like the home bakers traditionally use volume measuring. You're using cups and tablespoons and that sort of thing. But getting back to the issue of the flour, one of the examples that I use often with students is if I asked you to get me a cup of cake flour and you to get me a cup of cake flour and two additional people, and I put the four cups in front of me and then weighed each one would weigh something different. And therein lies the problem with volume baking. If you're making one cake at home, it's okay. But if you want to make that same cake over and over and over again and have it in a bake shop or to be successful with it and have it consistent, you really do need to weigh.
Now, we had our producer, Jessica, had asked both of you for your favorite cake recipes and what your standbys are. And Linda, you said the Hershey's chocolate cake, and that is
favorite.
My go-to cake
favorite.
To make.
Love that cake. Now, I dream about that cake.
Is that the boiling water?
Yes.
The boiling water and oil cake, right?
Yeah. It's such a thin batter.
Yeah. And that it scared me at first.
Right.
I was like, oh, dear.
Is this really going to like? But it was nice. So moist and fluffy. And the frosting. And I always, instead of the, for the milk, I'll put instant espresso in there for a mocha frosting.
Oh.
And just that extra little kick. Of course, if you have kids running around, you probably don't
want to give that
caffeine along with the sugar.
But that's a great, I tell, if they're like, oh, I need a really good chocolate cake recipe, I'm like, that is the best go-to. And I like Martha Stewart. I follow a lot of her things, but that recipe is never fails. It's the best.
It's simple. It's very, very easy for an inexperienced baker. It is, I feel as well that it's
absolutely
a great one to go to.
That is an easy, that's a great cake.
Now I'm shaking my finger at you.
Yes.
So because you have brought in what looks to be the most wonderful. Oh my. It's a single layer espresso chocolate cake with a chocolate ganache.
Correct.
All right. So I looked at your recipe when they gave me your recipe before you came in. And the first thing that I said to myself, 8 eggs. That's a lot of eggs.
Yes, it is. So in all fairness, I have to say that the recipe that I gave you is to make a 10-inch cake. And it's a big cake. It's like 20 servings. So what I did yesterday when I made this cake was rather than make a 10, I made an 8 and a 6. And the 6-inch went to Pane Dolce, our student-operated bakery at Schenectady County Community College, and the 8 came here to WAMC. So
now it's a very rich cake, and that's why you say when it's a 24-serving cake and a 10-inch, you take very small slivers because of the richness, and it's also flourless.
Yes. Flourless. It has a pound of butter in it. It has a pound of butter, a pound of chocolate.
It's
8 ounces of espresso coffee, along with the 8 eggs and a bit of sugar. So yeah, it's quite dense.
Now we are going to cut into this, but
all
I want to get to the phones first.
Sure.
And we're going to go first to Paula in Albany. Good afternoon, Paula.
Hi. How are you?
We're doing well. What question do you have?
Well, I'd like to know from Linda Kinlan. What are some of the most popular flavors of cupcakes and cakes and things that people are you know, getting into now?
I would have to say our most popular is the Always Fall. It's a pumpkin cupcake with cinnamon buttercream. And then we have a State Street. We name them after all the streets and stuff in Albany. That's a coconut, and that's really, really popular.
Oh, boy.
I would probably have to say that and the Guinness chocolate. Those are our top three.
And do you see the trends that are coming up, in, like what seems to be becoming a lot more popular in the cake and cupcake world? Or do you just really go to your own drum?
I always beat to my own drummer. And I said my mother never took my drum. That's always the good. But I would have to say those are like the three most popular.
Well, thank you, Paula.
Well, thank you very much. Sounds delicious.
1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. We're going to take a quick break. And while we're there, Sue is going to cut into that cake and we will taste it on air.
Support for WAMC comes from Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. HMT at the Spot Little Theater, presenting Witness for the Prosecution by Agatha Christie, weekends through February 23rd in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. And Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm, snowfarm.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Food Friday on Vox Pop. Our guest today, our executive chef and culinary educator at Schenectady County Community College, Sue Hotowski, and Linda Kinlan, owner and baker at Bake For You in Albany, New York. So we're going to go back to the phones and then we shall taste your cake, Sue.
All right.
And we have Heather in Connecticut. Hi, Heather. Yeah.
Hello. Okay.
What's your question for them today?
Yes, I have a question. There's an apple cake that I make. I've got the recipe many years ago from House Beautiful. And basically, it's a cake made in a springform pan. You put breadcrumbs on the bottom, and you chop up one apple and add it to the batter. And the second apple, you cut in 8 slices and roll it in brown sugar, granulated sugar, and cinnamon, and lay the slices on the top in a wheel. And then when it's completely cold, you sprinkle confectioner's sugar over the top. My sugar always looks melted. Why? How do I make it stay white?
Well, it actually won't. It will melt.
It does in the picture.
It does. Well, they may have used something called sanding sugar in the photo, which is granulated sugar that's larger in size. It's a coarser grained, and that will not melt as easily as granulated sugar. If you're using just generic granulated sugar from the supermarket, that's going to melt. But look for sanding or coarse sugar.
Okay, so it's like the English demerara sugar? No.
It is. That would work as well. That would work also.
Okay, but that would go in the cake, not on the top, obviously. And then when you put the confectioner's sugar on the top.
Oh, so you're asking how the powdered sugar stays white and it doesn't absorb all the
I misunderstood the question. I misunderstood. You need to wait until the cake is completely, completely cool.
I do.
You do.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm making it tomorrow. I'll try again. It doesn't spoil the taste. It's still delicious.
It sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you. Bye.
And we're going down to Red Hook now. Hi, Caroline.
Hi. How are you?
We're all doing well. What question do you have for Linda and Sue?
My question is, what are some good ways to incorporate marzipan into a cake?
That is one
mascarpone cheese or marzipan?
Marzipan.
Marzipan.
The almond stuff.
There you go. You can use half marzipan or actually frangipan, which is made from almond paste. And you can sort of replace some of the butter and add frangipan. It's quite delicious.
Ooh.
Yeah, you can replace some of the butter with frangipan, which is made from almond paste, just like marzipan is, but it has a couple other ingredients in it. And you can buy it.
Can you put it into frosting or something?
No, you can put it right in the cake itself if you'd like. So you can have an almond-flavored cake.
Well, I don't want to just have, you know, like I could use almond flavoring, but I want the marzipan sort of texture or something, if there's some way to do that.
Oftentimes it's rolled, just like fondant, and laid over the cake. So in place of icing, you roll it out like pastry crust or fondant and drape it over the cake. Is that what you're...
I don't know. I could try that.
Well, how did you hear about this ingredient and decide that you want to incorporate it in a cake?
Well, I have Norwegian friends, and they say that they do all kinds of things with marzipan, except I can't get them to say what.
You also can roll it out, cut it with a circle, and put it between two layers of cake. So if you can, you know, if you made a yellow cake, for example, and you wanted to incorporate the marzipan, you could put some buttercream on the base layer, roll the marzipan out, cut a circle of it, place it on top of the buttercream, and then put your second layer over it. So when you sliced the cake, the marzipan would be in the middle.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I'll try that.
Good luck, Caroline, and let us know how it comes out and what you end up using it with.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. Kathleen, hold on one sec because we need to try this flourless cake now. Because we've been sitting here and looking at it. Now, after Sue had cut it, I mean, there's a lovely, just how fudgy it looks. Linda says it's good. She's already dug in. Linda's not waiting.
Thank you.
It's very good.
It just absolutely melts in your mouth.
It does.
And pardon me for speaking with my mouth full.
That is nice.
But it's so rich. You have that really nice, deep coffee flavor. The espresso comes through. But it's not so overwhelming that it kills any taste
it's like
of the chocolate.
Layers.
Yes.
The chocolate and it's nice.
Thank you.
It is.
Thanks.
Good job.
And
we have
the recipe posted online for the listeners so that you can make this cake this weekend and impress all of your friends and just feel so happy after it. So we're going over now to Kathleen in Saugerties. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, good afternoon. What a nice show.
I'm so glad you're enjoying it.
Talking about cakes and delightful things. I was always curious about the science that goes into, putting baking powder in and baking soda. So I never understood what I was doing, but I've managed to bake things, fairly well. But that seems like an important thing to understand. So if that's not too boring a topic.
No.
I think it's kind of interesting because it fluffs it up, it can flatten it out, and I know with like baking soda that's generally added to something with some kind of citrus, some kind of orange, orange juice or other things. So
you're
that's
right.
The question.
They're both chemical leaveners. They're what give lift to the cake and aerate the cake chemically. Baking soda is an alkali, and in order to neutralize that alkali, there has to be some form of acid present in the formula. So whenever you see baking soda, there has to be another ingredient in that cake that's acidic, and that could be chocolate, it could be Dutch processed cocoa powder, it could be buttermilk, it could be any kind of citrus juice, or even brown sugar sometimes has enough acidity to sort of neutralize the baking soda. And baking powder is basically baking soda with the acid added to it. So that's sort of the gist of it.
That's the best
explanation. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was good.
Thank you.
I have one little marzipan thing to give to you because I have made muffins, and it called for adding some of the almond paste or the marzipan pushed into the batter with a little bit of, like, raspberry jelly. I forget what I was making. But that was kind of interesting, and you do get that big taste of marzipan when you're biting into that muffin.
That sounds lovely.
So, as you said, to slice it and put it in the middle of the batter. That's really, yeah, that sounds really great. And that's a little bit of what this muffin recipe had called for.
That sounds so good.
It does. Thank you.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. If you put the jam inside the marzipan and you had that little jam ball inside of the muffins.
That sounds delicious.
And then it would just kind of break open.
That sounds yummy.
Oh, I think we know what we're doing tonight when we go home, right? And we're going down to Hunter and Elizabeth. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Hi, I'd like to know what you recommend to purchase in order to weigh ingredients as opposed to measuring them by volume, and also where to purchase vanilla bean, because I live in the woods and there's no vanilla beans here.
Well, I can answer the scale question. You're going to want to buy a small digital scale, which today are available just about everywhere from Target to any of the specialty cooking supply stores. They range in price from $25 to $50 is sort of the average price. And they're so very reasonably priced. And you want to make sure that your scale will weigh both metrics and U.S. measurements, pounds and ounces. Because if you haven't noticed, in newspapers, the New York Times, all their recipes are now written in both volume and metrics, not volume in U.S. measurements, but volume and metrics. So, and most of the digital scales, I haven't seen one in 7 years that they make that only weighs pounds and ounces. They generally both will, they'll weigh both. So,
okay.
Yeah, there you go.
And no vanilla bean.
I'm sorry. Vanilla beans. I'm not sure where you live, but the co-op in Albany, Honest Way Co-op, has them. Healthy Living in Saratoga Springs carries them readily.
She's down in the Catskills.
You're down in the Catskills.
Maybe online. There's a lot of places online that you can. I mean, I get a lot of like sanding sugar and things like that. So, I would imagine if you Googled.
That's probably the best way to go since they don't generally sell them in
If they don't have them in the woods.
Yeah.
If they don't have them in the woods in Catskill, go Google it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're going over to Springfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just calling with a question. I have a lot of food restrictions. I can't eat refined white sugars. And I don't eat white flour, so baking and making delicious desserts can be a challenge. And I've used things like dates before and figs, and I'm trying to stay away from artificial sweeteners. So I just am wondering if you guys have any tips or ingredients that would be good to use for sugar-free baking, or if you have any specific recipes or a place to find any of these kind of recipes.
I actually just made someone's scones yesterday. It was a special order with agave. I don't know if you've used that at all.
I haven't yet.
I find a lot of success with that. As far as flours, I use quinoa. I like the quinoa flour a lot. I love it. It's so nice to work with.
How so?
It's hard to describe. It's kind of like the same consistency.
Okay.
And it has a little bit of a nutty flavor, you know, flavor profile, but I love working with it. And especially people that are gluten-free, you know, if there's a sugar restriction, if you use the agave and, you know, the quinoa flour, I think you'd have nice results.
Can you use, like, when you use alternative flours, like if it says a cup of flour, can I use a cup of, like, quinoa flour or almond flour or whatever it is?
I'm not familiar with almond flour, but with the quinoa flour, I use it like I use a regular King Arthur. I use the King Arthur Sir Galahad, and I use the quinoa just same as I would use that.
Okay, great.
Good luck, Nicole.
Thank you very much.
800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK-1. We're going over to Peg in Belchertown. Hi, Peg.
Hi. This is a really basic question. I've tried many recipes and different types of flour, and I can't get bread that looks like bread. It's usually it's always kind of crumbly, but it's never that, you know, doesn't have any holes in it. It's just kind of like a crumbly cake sort of thing. And I wonder if there's something that I'm missing. And I've tried quite a few recipes.
Just a plain white peasant bread or?
Right, just plain white bread.
Well, you know, bread is a very, believe it or not, bread is very complicated. And it's made with the least amount of ingredients and the simplest ingredients. But the manipulation of those ingredients really has a major impact on the success or failure of bread. I would say probably to recommend to you to, I'm not sure where you're sourcing the recipes. Like where, what?
Where are you just going online or are you taking them from a cookbook?
I'm taking them from several cookbooks.
May I ask one? Which one?
Well, the first one is Fanny Farmer, but I've taken it from other recipes as well.
Okay. I would suggest if you want to bake bread and you perhaps that you try a book called Bread, and it's written by Jeffrey Hamelman, and he is, I would say, clearly one of the foremost masters of bread in the country today. And it's a very easy book to understand. It kind of explains the nuances of bread. And besides giving large-scale formulas, it also gives you the weights for small batches, two loaves of bread at a time.
Okay. And how is his name spelled?
His last name is Hamelman. I believe it's Hamelman.
Okie doke. I'll give it a try.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
So when we're starting our base for our cakes, the eggs and the butter, and there was something I thought I had heard about that if you... the butter cooking the eggs, or you wanted to do it slowly, or the sugar. It's the sugar in the eggs.
The sugar in the eggs.
Okay,
and
I knew there was something with eggs. Yeah. We'll cook together, yeah. And that's why you wanted to cream it first with the butter, I think.
With creamed cakes, and I'm sure that Linda can speak to that, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so mix it first with the butter, your eggs, to help. So that the eggs don't cook from the sugar because of some sort of chemical reaction.
Yeah, there you go.
It's so crazy how
it is.
It all matters.
It all matters.
You generally are creaming butter and sugar together to aerate those two ingredients, incorporate air cells. Okay. It gets real fluffy and it kind of grows in volume in the bowl. And then to that, you begin to add eggs.
Okay.
And you add those eggs slowly because you're now trying to create an emulsion. You're trying to emulsify two ingredients, which by their very nature don't want to mix. Okay. You've got the liquid in the eggs and the fat in the butter. And so if you don't add them slowly and they're not warmed properly, you're going to look in that bowl and you're going to have this sort of curdled mess as opposed to a nice creamed mixture where the fat absorbed the egg. So, yeah.
Now, can we over mix our batters?
Sure.
Just like we do with bread.
Sure
okay.
Can.
I'm getting
sure.
old.
No,
yeah.
You can. Sure can.
That we hand mix all of our cookies.
Really?
And they are really puffy. And people say, how do you do that? I'm at home with my, you know, and I have muscles to prove it. But we don't, you know, with less mixing, that's, we get a really beefy, puffy cookie. So you can definitely over.
For sure.
For sure.
I mean, and most people are looking for those fluffy cakes, but so, I mean, there's a lot of recipes out there. I mean, just like this flourless cake that, I mean, it will be quite dense and they're supposed to be dense.
Correct.
I mean, there are a lot of vanilla cakes that always, for some reason, vanilla always comes out so much more dense than if I were doing like the Hershey's, chocolate cakes. And I think, oh, I really wanted something really light and fluffy, though, for my vanilla. So I would.
You know, there's a great recipe for a vanilla cake that actually it's similar. It's very similar to the Hershey's chocolate cake that you were referring to earlier, and it uses wine. You put white wine in it. Have you made that cake?
No, but I've heard of
it. It's moist and it's delicious. Yeah, it's quite yummy.
Yeah, I have a Chardonnay cake recipe, so I'll have to try that.
There you go.
Then. Oh, yum. Okay. 800 800-348-2551. That's 800-34-TALK-1. We're going to take one more call before we go to the break. And Jean in Otis, Massachusetts has a tip for us.
Oh, not a tip. No, I want a tip.
Oh, okay. We can do that too.
You were talking about marzipan before, and my family has been making a chocolate ganache Yule log cake every year for the last 20 years. And in the beginning, we used either almond paste or marzipan, rolled it out, squashed it with food dye to make colors for the hollies and the berries. But somehow this has gotten to be a nightmare. It's really hard to do. It gets very sticky. And we've tried rolling it between wax paper on oiled boards. I'm just wondering if you have a tip for working marzipan and cutting it into decorative shapes.
Have you, are you making your own marzipan or are you purchasing marzipan?
No, I'm buying it.
You are?
Yes.
You should try making it. It's pretty simple to make. It's basically just a good quality almond paste and a little corn syrup or glucose syrup, which is easily readily available, and 10X sugar, confectioner sugar. And you sort of knead it together on the counter like you were kneading bread dough or anything else. And you have more control over that. The canned version of marzipan can be kind of on the sticky side. I think they use more corn syrup, solids, and it has a tendency to be more sticky. If you're not willing to try and make it on your own, try rolling it out on 10X sugar, like dusting your countertop with 10X sugar, and that should help. That would help.
And so where the almond paste, I would buy that.
Correct.
And I have a feeling that actually that's what we're buying is so low almond paste.
Oh.
So we should be mixing that with...
Correct. A little bit of corn syrup and 10X sugar. And that, there you go.
Actually make it into marzipan.
Correct.
Would there be a recipe for that online?
There is. I'm sure if you went online. I off the top of my head, I don't recall what the ratios are. But
right.
I'm sure if you went online, you'd find it.
Okay.
Good
Thank
luck.
You so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jean.
All right. Bye-bye.
And we are going over to Bob in Troy. Hi, Bob. Oh, and we'll do a break after Bob, but Bob, we'll go to you. Bob, are you there? I do believe we have lost Bob then. All right. We will take a break then, Zach. Thank you. And we'll be back with our guests and to talk more cakes and get those tips ready if you have them and your questions.
Support for WAMC comes from Terrapin Restaurant, Rhinebeck, celebrating 50 years of new American cuisine, showcasing the seasonal bounty of the Hudson Valley, terrapinrestaurant.com. Proctor's, presenting Dream the Impossible Dream, Man of La Mancha, on Saturday, March 8th, proctors.org for tickets. And Rare Earth Wine Bar on The Circle, Glens Falls, New York. Now open, specializing in pairing food and wines from around the world, Rare Earth Wine Bar on Facebook.
We're back on Food Friday with executive chef and culinary educator at Schenectady County Community College. I knew at one
You're
point
You're going to have to say SCCC.
There you go. Sue Heltowski and also Linda Kinlan, owner and baker at Bake For You in Albany. And we're going to go to Jim in Albany, who's been waiting patiently. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you guys today?
We're all right, thank you. What is your question today?
A tip, actually, on the marzipan, and then two questions, if I could. In Scandinavian baking, a lot of time marzipan is used for cookies, like almond cookies, with just, you know, a very simple thing, and then an almond right there. And then you bake it in a tart shell and then put, like, really fresh berries on it. That's like a very summer Norwegian Scandinavian dessert where you have, like, sort of a... an almond or marzipan tart with really fresh, delicious, like raspberries, or they have cloudberries there and gooseberries, stuff like that. But that's an idea for one of the callers. Two questions. I was wondering if SCCC had a charcuterie class for people that aren't taking the courses there, that don't want a culinary degree, but maybe want to learn how to make sausage and things like that.
We do have a charcuterie class. It's Garmanger. And anyone can come and take a single class. Generally, the cooking classes are three credit classes that meet once a week for the semester. And you don't have to be matriculated into the program to come and take a class. So that would be an area that's covered in the garde-manger class.
All right. But like something like if someone works during the day and sort of...
A continuing ed. Occasionally there is. And if you check the website and look at the continuing ed classes, you'll see a list of all the food classes that are offered. So from time to time, they have offered that, yes.
Okay, great. My second question is for Linda. I have been in the shop, love it. And I was wondering what some of her, because she comes up with wonderful savory scones and puff pastries. And I wonder what some of the... inspiration is for some of that, because some of the combinations are just wild and delicious.
Well, because I don't sleep a lot. I love savory, and because I have to do so many cookies, I think that savory is just, I don't know, it's exciting to me. And being Italian, like I love to mix anything together. I don't know. I really don't know where it all comes from.
But you also said beforehand, fearlessness and the fearlessness your kids as well, giving suggestions.
That's true. I'm really never afraid to try anything. That's definitely for sure. Well, I think this weekend, actually, we're going to try a chocolate stout scone.
Oh, no.
So that might be there on the chopping block tomorrow.
Well, keep up the good work. So thanks for taking my call, ladies.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
That was sweet.
That was.
It was indeed. And we're going to Jill in Waterford now. Hi, Jill.
Hi, ladies. I have a bread question, specifically a yeast question.
Okay.
How do I know if my yeast is fresh? I've had two situations where apparently it wasn't. I had bought some yeast from the grocer, and I didn't think to look at the expiration date, and it was definitely dead because my dough didn't rise. But then again, sometime later, I was going to do this again. I bought the yeast, I looked at the expiration date, and it was already dead. And I finally found some at a different grocer that was, you know, it hadn't expired yet, mm-hmm. but my dough still didn't rise.
So are you talking about actual fresh yeast that you purchased in, like, the dairy aisle, that kind of yeast, or instant dry yeast that comes in a little packet?
It was instant dry yeast. I remember back in the day when I was a kid, my mom used to use this paste yeast.
Right.
But I had no clue where to find that, so I just went by the, you know.
Okay, so you're using instant dry yeast. The way to know if it's fresh or not is to just look at the expiration date. It generally has a fairly long shelf life. It's usually good for 6 months to a year and can be stored at room temperature. So
I was told it had to be in the refrigerator.
No, not instant dry yeast. And if you had yeast and your bread didn't rise and the yeast was not dead, you may have killed it by introducing it to water that was too hot, because it has a thermal death point, and that's generally around 140 degrees. So if you mixed it with water that was a little too hot, it would kill it, and your bread was sunk before it had a chance to rise, so to speak.
Right. Okay. But could keeping it in the fridge have also killed it?
No.
Okay. Because I had, like I said, I had the yeast that was not expired. It still had another couple of months, and it didn't rise. But I will definitely
check the water temperature then.
Yeah, I will definitely take that in consideration. I knew they said, you know, very warm water, but you know,
right.
I didn't put a thermometer to it.
Yeah, you may want to, and then you won't.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Thanks,
Jill.
All right,
thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Now we're going to Yakov in Newburgh, and you have a tip for us?
Yes, thank you very much. You had a caller a little bit earlier that was asking about vanilla bean.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a wide range of excellent spices from a place called the Spice House in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I know that's a little far, but they ship. And they are exceptional. I've had Madagascar vanilla bean from them that is exceptional. They have a wide range of baking spices as well as savory. I mean, a whole range. I just got a spice that's used in North African cooking called baharat, which they have. So it comes in glass bottles with little descriptions of the spices and what their uses are. The Spice House in Milwaukee on Old World 3rd Street. They ship spices all around the world, and they hand grind all of them. They're really excellent. I also wanted to make a comment that for people who keep kosher, there's a real problem with cakes because the best cakes are dairy. They have butter, they have, and I've never been satisfied with substitutes, and I've had some of the best. But one cake that really works very well was a cake that I made where that called for olive oil. And you would think that it would give the taste of olive oil in the cake. It doesn't at all. It makes a very light, very moist cake. I think it was in Moosewood Cookbook. I'm not sure. But it was excellent.
Well, thank you for letting us know.
Yeah. And the Spice House.
The Spice House. Excellent.
Milwaukee.
Hopefully they're still listening. Thank you.
Thank
okay.
you.
Bye-bye.
Now, we were talking about it before the show started, Linda, about vegan and also the gluten-free cakes of what and you've had some experience of working with the different ingredients and making a successful and really yummy
with vegan. Absolutely. I'm still toying with the gluten-free. Mm-hmm. I mean, I experiment all the time. And actually, Bake Mart just delivered me a 50-pound bag of gluten-free flour yesterday, which they just came out with, and it's really nice. But vegan, there's so many great things that you can make vegan, and you really can't tell. I have my brother's a vegan for years, and he's traveled all over, and mm-hmm. he said, I mean, I think we've mastered.
Nice.
I like to think we have.
That's great. That's
but
awesome.
There's some really good, and it's not even just that people, it's dietary mm-hmm. reasons
oh, yeah.
they have to eat vegan. So it's really nice to offer, I think.
So what is one of your favorite cakes to do that is vegan?
A vegan chocolate cake.
Ooh.
And it's dense, mm-hmm. but it's delicious. And we did a cupcake tasting in May to introduce, like, you know, different things of our different cupcakes. And the vegan one, people were like, I'm thinking they're going to love the Guinness. And they're like, I love that vegan chocolate cake.
That's
like,
wonderful.
Oh my God.
That's great.
It's really, really good. I think it's a hit.
Nice.
Excellent. We're going to Bob and Troy. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
We're all doing well.
Thank Good. You. Listen, I called maybe to give some suggestions because I am a baker by trade.
Okay.
The lady who was talking about the powdered sugar on the top of her cake, mm-hmm. if she goes 25% cornstarch against her powdered sugar, or the confectionery sugar, that should control the melting point, because that's what you would do on jelly donuts and different types of
yeast
cake donuts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a lady who was talking about making a cake with the marzipan.
Mm-hmm.
If you take 50% marzipan and 50% either shortening or butter and do it like a pound cake, you'll get a heavy cake, but you'll be able to use the mix. But you have to cream it very well, like the old wine cake. I heard you speaking about the white wine cake. And the base for that is you cream the sugar and butter for a long period of time. And you'll get a nice cake that way as well. And my other suggestion is the gentleman who was talking about Wisconsin Spice House. You don't have to go that far. Most of your local health food stores carry vanilla bean. Like the Uncle Sam health food store in Troy, Miles' health food store over in Albany, the Green Grocer out in Route 9, and the cookbook that he was also talking about is called Moose Creek.
Oh, okay. All right, with the olive
right.
oil cake.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Bob. We appreciate that.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-34-TALK. one. And we have another yeast question. People really like talking about yeast today. Judith in Woodstock, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well. What's your question?
Well, my question was about instant yeast because I've been a bread baker for a long time. But every once in a while, I see a recipe that calls for instant yeast, and I wonder if I can use regular yeast. Or should I buy the instant yeast for that?
No, you can use regular yeast. And when you say regular yeast, you mean fresh yeast or
I buy active, dry yeast at the health food store.
Active dry?
Yes.
Okay. You're fine. Generally, if a recipe calls for instant yeast and you're swinging up to fresh yeast, you need to use more fresh yeast than instant yeast. And if you're using active dry and you have a formula that calls for instant dry, you need to use a tad bit more. So to go from instant to fresh, it's about twice as much.
Ah.
And to go from instant to active dry, it's half that amount. So
instant to regular.
Okay, instant to active dry.
Active dry.
You need
to
use a wee bit more active dry than
use
instant.
More, okay.
And generally with instant yeast, it's blended with the dry ingredients, and active dry is proofed
in liquid.
So
right.
Those are the primary differences.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I just finished putting dog biscuits in my oven for
my
dog. But I also wanted to mention to the person who was having trouble finding vanilla bean, I get wonderful stuff from the King Arthur flour catalog.
Oh, they're great.
Yes.
And I use their flour all the time anyway. It's just a wonderful source for things, whether you live in the woods or not.
Well, thank you, Judith.
Thank you for your help. Enjoyed the program very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. And we're going to Poughkeepsie now, and Cynthia. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. One of the ladies mentioned in regard to not over-mixing things that she mixed her cookies by hand. My question is, I know that you have to be very careful when you add the dry ingredients to cookies to not over-mix, but is she also creaming the fat, let's say like the butter and the sugar and the eggs by hand,
yes,
or
ma'am,
using a mixer for that? And then adding the dry ingredients by hand.
No, I do it strictly all by hand.
You're hardcore.
I am hardcore.
For sale, too.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so you use like a wooden spoon or something and mix the fat, let's say the butter and the sugar together, and then mix the eggs in also that way?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cynthia.
I know, you think I was crazy.
We're both looking at Linda. We're thinking, oh, my goodness.
We have to talk after Linda.
Oh, my gosh, all of those cookies that you do, which you did bring cookies with you today. And what kind did you bring us?
I brought the white chip and cranberry, which is our signature. The vegan caramel cinnamon, which is kind of like a sophisticated snickerdoodle. And, I think I brought your girl's best friend. It's chocolate chip, potato chip, and pretzel.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if I did. I forgot.
Open
I was rushing.
Box.
Oh, I brought brownies. But I don't think I brought the girl's best friend. I can't remember.
It just means we'll have to come visit you.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? For certain.
There was a kind of cake that we wanted to touch on, and we were talking about adult cakes, and that's the boozy cakes.
They're so much fun.
And you have a specialty, the Karen Walker
that
you do.
The Karen Walker is a gin. It's a lime cake with a gin buttercream.
Wow.
It's delicious.
Now, how do you do that with all the alcohol and then having the dairy in there and it all congeals together nicely?
It just all comes together nicely.
Wow.
And it's a good cake. It's a nice summer cake.
Sounds like it. The lime really seems like it would be refreshing.
It really is.
A good play with the sweet buttercream.
Sounds yummy.
It's like one of my favorites.
And because it's in the buttercream and in the frostings that you're putting the alcohol in, obviously kids should not
be
eating.
It's not a kid-friendly cake.
No.
No. It's a happy hour cake.
But we're
it's just adults.
Like there you go.
But we're also talking about, you know, buttercreams, they're so sweet. I mean, just wickedly sweet with all the confectioner sugar that you're putting in there. So when you're adding the alcohol in to counter and to make sure that you actually get that taste of whatever liqueur you may be putting in. I mean, is it?
You put a lot.
A lot. Okay.
We don't skimp on vanilla or the alcohol.
Well, we are about out of time. I'm so sorry to say, because I have had such a wonderful time speaking with both of you ladies.
Thank you.
Our guests today have been executive chef and culinary educator at Schenectady County Community College, Sue Hotalski. I know you're, everyone's laughing now because of the alliteration of the C's. And also Linda Kinlan, owner and baker at Bake For You in Albany, New York. And your favorite cakes, if you were to go home and make a cake, what would it be?
It would be the Hershey chocolate cake.
Hershey chocolate cake?
Yeah. Really? We are all in consensus. Down. So everybody turn on your ovens and may a cake be in everyone's oven this weekend. And now we will go to the news.